Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat Podcast. And with us this week, we have Tom Giaconelli. Hello.
Hello. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. So we are at Romans. For those that have not come across Tom or Romans International, we've done a few podcasts now, so you can go back. And in the first one, we sort of covered a bit of history of the business and how we sort of got here and Tom's story and stuff like that. But we're here for a bit of an update. I guess I've actually just told people kind of who you are, but if you, can you tell the listeners who've not come across Romans just a little bit about what you guys do?
Yeah. So Romans International is, we're based in Surrey. So we're an independent supercar dealer. So just had a little tour before we spoke, and we've got, I think 90 to 100 cars in stock, mix of supercars, luxury SUVs, a few sort of modern classics, as you could say. But yeah, we are a luxury car dealership essentially.
Yeah. And it ranges from, okay, there's a few sort of tiny items in the corner. There's a couple of R baths, but everything else is what would be the sort of, is there like a sort of bottom level that you consider?
Yeah. Our bottom level is probably a hot hatch. So we'd get a few hot hatches, but they'd have to be absolute top of the range. So we get A45s. We get mini John Cooper Works. That's mainly because I have a soft spot for them. Okay. And I had one as my first car. Our normal sort of entry level price point is about 50 grand.
Okay. And I guess that sort of fits in. The hot hatch would also sit in a garage as the runaround of someone
that has
all this other stuff.
That's the thing. We're trying to cater for our client as well as his wife, his kids, who might have a hypercar, but will want a Range Rover as his runaround and maybe a Mini for his daughter.
Yeah. So when I came here last, the building next door existed, but I think was being refurbed to some extent. It was nearly finished. And then we did a podcast remotely. So maybe it must have been finished.
It must have been pre-COVID.
That was like 2021 was the last one we did.
Yeah. I just had a child. So it must have been, 2021. And then the one we did before that was, midst of our refurb. So that was pre-COVID?
Yeah, 19 or something like that. 19 or 20
something
maybe.
Something like that.
But that's now finished. So you've now got tons more space.
Yeah.
Which you seem to have filled.
It's a big site now. So since we bought the garage, which used to be a Ford dealership next door, we've got a lot more cars here. There's more people. There's more business to be done. More stress as well. But it's working pretty well. And the whole place has just been upgraded. Obviously, when we did that one, we then had to refurb our old showroom. So it all kind of felt as one. But yeah, no, it's been good.
Yeah, what's it like having like that volume of cars of a huge variety of values and how new and old they are, sort of thing? Is managing? Do you try and manage the sort of stock level, the overall stock level, and the sort of risk, I guess?
Yeah, that's partly my job is as the sort of main buyer is that I've always got a, like, we try not to have two or three of the same car, you know, unless they're very, very different in spec. But we try and have a mixture of, we always want those kind of halo cars. You know, we've got a 918, a P1, a couple of Bugattis, an Enzo you've seen. So we try and have a few of those. Then we'll have like a selection of sort of more sort of supercar territory in terms of like 300 grand plus, which are like the 458 Specialis, the Pistas, the 6.7, 6.5 LTs, things like that, which is more what we're known for. And then we'll have a whole forecourt full of SUVs because they, that's our bread and butter. They sell all the time. We can keep ticking those over. And then we'll just maintain, I don't know, then we'll choose, pick and choose what comes. You know, obviously we get offered a lot of cars. So we always look at those first and pick and choose which ones we want. We'll obviously make offers on cars all day, every day. So we just want to handpick the ones we really want. But essentially, if as long as we maintain between 75 to 90 cars, that's kind of our kind of our point where we're comfortable. Yeah. I think any more than that, it becomes extremely stressful. Any less than that, we're probably not going to do enough business.
Yeah, yeah. And like walking around the dealership, I know I don't know whether people necessarily do this. I'm sure some of your customers do. I think most people, I can't even talk for most people. Do most people turn up knowing what they want? Or do some people turn up and go, oh, I want something. Oh, there's a new V12 Vantage. And you're like, oh, there's also the convertible. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, it's a mixture. We know they're serious. Well, they're more serious, I should say, when they turn up and they know exactly what they want.
Yeah.
They've done their research. You know, people don't visit loads of different dealerships these days when they want to buy a car. They've done all their research online, obviously. And then they'll come in and want to see the car. But we do get, because of where we're based, we're quite in an open site and we're, you know, next to a busy road, the A217. So people do just pitch up. And we've had quite a few walk-in deals where people just walk in, might not know what they want. And, you know, they'll talk to someone and we'll advise them and, you know, maybe take something out and they end up buying it. So it has its benefits being this kind of open site, but we also get a lot of people that just walk around pretending they want to buy something and actually have no real interest.
I think that's a good pastime. It's a good thing to do at the weekend is go and cruise around some dealerships and be like, I've not seen one of these cars before.
Well, that's it. Saturdays here are, we call it the Romans theme park because we literally get swarmed with people just wanting, traveled from all over the country, even from other countries sometimes, to come and see the cars we've got. Which is a double-edged sword because it's great. We love people's enthusiasm, but you can easily spend an hour or two with someone and then realize they, you know, get off in their Ford Cougar and drive off. You think, oh, okay, he definitely wasn't in the market
for that Enzo. Or maybe he was.
Maybe.
That is tricky. What are you seeing? I feel like overall market at the moment, what are you giving you sort of impressions in the various categories that you guys deal with?
Yeah, there's different pockets of our market and they're all kind of quite different in terms of like our normal newer stuff, 1 to 2 years old, has seen a massive drop off in prices. You know, the kind of after effects of COVID and Brexit and component shortages and massive supply shortages created this a bit of a bubble, which has been amazing for our industry. And if you speak to anyone that does what we do, they've all had two amazing years. But that has had a big recorrection this year, especially over the last 6 months, where prices have just fallen off massively. And I'm talking like newer Porsches, especially newer Range Rovers even, which, you know, people were paying massive amount premiums over list, and that has gone completely the other way. And that effect of going from over list to now under list, people are losing a lot of money. But the kind of the benefit of it is prices have come down a lot. cars are looking really good value now. And that kind of depreciation is starting to cool off and slow down. So I think people are just getting around the kind of idea of, wow, actually cars are starting to look good value again. Maybe now is a good time to buy.
It is an interesting one. Like I've not watched too much of the market other than buying my GTS and realizing I've just taken a massive hit. But at the same time, looking at other Porsches that were available, and I was aware, like the turbo market.
Yeah, that's been probably the worst of all the Porsches, because they made so many in the last year. Everyone was ordering one because they thought, oh my God, Turbo S's are making 40 grand over list. I'm going to order one. And they've all come through, and now the sort of narrative has changed. They're not worth anything over list now. So all those people that ordered one are now thinking, oh God, I don't want it. Just put it on the market or cancel their order. So there's loads of brand new Porsches in the Porsche network. And that's obviously pushing down prices on the used ones. So it will kind of they'll find their level again, but right now there's this kind of oversaturation.
It is one that, like that particular one, if I was in the market for a Porsche right now, I would be watching turbos and going, I reckon sometime in the next couple of months, 6 months, maybe, like these prices are going to keep coming down because there's just so many up for sale. But at the same time, you'll be like, there's a possibility of getting a turbo with a 130 something at some point.
Yeah.
Like that's very possible.
Yeah, it's
and
not
you
far
look
off.
Like if you order a new Carrera S, that could easily be 130.
Yeah, that's the thing. And the older, I'm still talking 992s, Carrera S's, to get a good one, they're still at least 80 grand. So, you know, that it gets to a point where everything just looks good value. And Turbo S's will find their level, whether it's 130, 140. I think they're already finding it. But keep on going down and down and down and down until they're worth nothing.
It's basically a brand new car that is the top of the range, and you can buy it for less than the bottom of the range.
Yeah.
It's going to come back up at some point, but as you say, there are a lot of them. And then the finance has got a lot more. Have you seen quite a big change in buyers and type of buyers and cars that are selling?
Because finance interest rates has been the biggest driver of why the market values have come down, because less people are buying because they don't want to go into a higher interest rate. I mean, you know, a lot of people, probably half our customers, normally finance their cars. So, you know, and the days of getting in and out of cars in terms of buying one, having it 6 months, selling it, not losing a lot, keeping on a low interest rate, those days obviously are not there right now. So people are scared to sell because they don't want to take the depreciation and they don't want to go into a higher interest rate. So that has fueled this whole thing of prices coming down. But like anything, when people normalize to rates, and you know, my dad will always tell me, you know, back in the day when interest rates went up, there was always an effect, a sort of initial effect. And then over time, people just get used to the rate. They think, okay, well, that's what it is. I'm kind of used to it now. And there is the potential that they're going to come down next year. So it's we're noticing already it's starting to normalize, and people are thinking, oh, do you know what? I'll take the finance. So which is encouraging us. But yeah, look, no denying it's definitely like the housing market. It's put some hurdles in front of you know, doing deals.
Yeah, yeah. And what is, presumably like housing, like all these things, certain cars are sort of impervious to this. Are certain cars impervious to this, or some? What's faring the worst, and what's, okay, we discussed turbos, but on what's still, you know?
Well, I think
going around masters.
The older you get in terms of the cars, the more safe they are, and obviously the rarer cars, you can still hold out. They're not making them anymore. There's fewer of them, so they're not as affected. Any car that's affected by new car supply is going to be worse or off, but the older cars, especially the very top end, the hypercars, you're not really seeing prices come down on those. If anything, they've been much more solid, and some of them are still going up and up, especially the really high-end investors. And, you know, they're thinking, well, the stock market's not great. I've lost a load of money in crypto, possibly. You know, where should I, what's safe, gold or, you know?
A Chiron.
Or Chiron. So and what can I do with gold, and what can I do with a Chiron? A Chiron's going to be much more fun. So that really high end is definitely kind of like gone against, the rest of the market, and they're holding pretty firm. Yes, there are a lot of people just sitting on their hands at the moment, but you know, no one's at that level, or very few people at that level who own a collection of hypercars are going to feel the need, oh, interest rates have gone up, I need to sell a few cars. It doesn't happen so much.
Yeah. And of those sorts of things like Chirons, et cetera, I know in the last couple of years, some stuff's kind of gone a bit mental. Have some cars come down a bit? Like how have like 918s, P1s, that sort of era of thing, how have they done?
They've all done pretty well, to be honest. The last year you've seen LaFerrari, for example, they've probably gone up in value £1 million in the last year. Yeah.
So what were they a year ago?
So a year ago, you could probably get one for about 2.3, that kind of money. And if you look online now, they're 3.3, at least, they're at least 3 million for a good one. So they've gone up. That's partly helped because Ferrari brought out a 2-year warranty for the battery, which was one of the big worries.
Is that quite a pricey option?
Do you know what? That's the beauty of it. I think it's about, £20,000, £25,000, I think it is. But
that's not that bad.
It's really good. I think the battery's £80,000. So, yeah. You know, to spend £25,000 and get a 2-year cover for your battery is I think, really good. And that helped massively. And that actually helped push up everything else. 918s went up. P1s have gone up. P1s still have the same issue, though, with the battery. Obviously, these hybrid, Holy Trinity, the batteries is the biggest worry. And the McLaren haven't sorted it out yet in terms of, I think the P1 battery is £100,000 if it goes wrong.
And if you leave them, it sounds like if you don't like actually drive it, they do go wrong.
Yeah.
Or have to.
Yeah, they can do. I mean, yeah, they go wrong sitting still. They can go wrong, you know, when they're out on the road. But
like most McLarens.
Yeah. But overall, it's been good. And it's, the US has been going absolutely crazy. Mm. And we kind of tend to follow their path a bit behind. And, you know, car auction prices have been mad. F50s have gone through the roof. F40s have been strong. Carrera GT has been strong. I mean, there's been a little bit of up and down where they kind of gone up too quickly and they have to kind of come back down. But overall, the overall sense is that those cars are all sort of going up.
With things like a LAF 918, P1, all cars which only came in left-hand drive. Did P1, could you get a P1 right-hand drive?
No.
So they were all left-hand drive. Is there anything really stopping you from selling a car like a LAF in the States?
Yes. The States has a whole different set of rules to the rest of Europe. The general rule of thumb is a car has to be 25 years old to be legally imported and registered in the US. But you can take a car on show and display purpose, which is something where you could buy a brand new LAF or, you know, a 2-year-old LAF, take it over there. And you could have it there. You'd have to have it on a set of show and display.
Registered in a certain place, etc.
Yeah. So you couldn't actually say, right, I'm going to drive this from California to New York and legally be able to do that. But yeah, very few cars. It's much more classic cars that go to the States. But a lot of that kind of newer stuff will go abroad. We sold quite a few cars to Germany this year. We sold a few cars to Dubai. And some of the right-hand drive stuff can go towards sort of Malaysia, Thailand, those kind of places.
Has that increased a lot over the last couple of years since our currencies?
Yeah. The funny thing is 7 or 8 years ago, it was the other way around. And we were always looking abroad for cars, special cars like that, because everything in the UK was so expensive and actually they were cheaper abroad. Now it's gone completely roles reversed, that people in Dubai are looking at the UK and thinking, bloody hell, everything looks amazing value in the UK at the moment. So that we've sold 2 918s to Dubai, LaFerrari, and they just think, wow, it's cheap. It's cheap in the UK.
Although, and actually, are cars from historically sort of UAE cars had a bit of a thing for not being looked after?
Yeah.
Is that still a concern?
We definitely do not want to buy cars from the kind of Middle East. Nothing to do with anything, but not that the people tend to look after them badly. There's an issue with the dust and the sand and the deserts and all that. There's countless stories of cars being damaged from underneath because of the dust and the sand. Obviously, the specs can be a little bit different. There's a few, you know, technical differences as well, which you've got to be aware of. But yeah, whenever we get a sort of UAE car offered to us, we're always a little bit apprehensive, and we need to know everything about the car. We need to know where it's been stored, where it's been serviced. And yeah, we tend not to buy them.
Yeah. Have you been following on that sort of thing? Have you been following Tavares's P1 build?
Is that the one that got in the earthquake? Was it an earthquake or something?
It was
yeah,
flooded.
Yeah.
There's footage of it literally like floating down the street.
I've seen that. No, I haven't seen what he's actually ended up doing. Oh,
he's rebuilding it and turning it into like a GTR type thing.
Right.
Quite cool. Oh, yeah. I just wondered if you've seen that. And I think
I've definitely seen the pictures.
When it sold at auction, it was quite low mileage, and it was like $2 million. It was one of the most expensive P1s or something.
Well, even though it was damaged.
No, before.
Oh, before.
Okay, the guy owned it for like 3 weeks.
Right.
Okay. And then it got flooded.
It just made me think of the, did you see the Wolf of Wall Street? Countach.
So there's two, is that right?
Oh, is there two?
There's one that was crashed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that drives, and they've both come up for auction. I don't know whether it's this on the same.
I don't know if it's the same. I saw a bunch of content about the crashed one, and it went for like mega money.
Did it? Just, what do you know what it went for?
Feel like it was definitely over $1 million. I think I saw $1.3 million.
And what's a normal Countach?
Like
worth
500, 400, I think.
Yeah,
I'm not 100% sure, but it was definitely like more than double for a completely crashed. But obviously, such an iconic film and just quite a cool thing to own. But
it's quite funny how that is like that's panned out. You go, someone's paid a lot of money for one that's crashed, because there is one that is not crashed that is also in the movie, and I'd be interested to see what.
Mm. And I think whether it actually crashed, I think it was a case of people taking a load of sledgehammers to it.
Yeah.
Which is actually why it was damaged.
Yeah, it's a funny old world. Did you see, there's been that white collection.
Yeah, that sold, looks pretty cool.
And there was a 918. I was listening to a podcast and they were talking about this. A white 918 sold for $4 million. It had like minimal miles on it. And it sold for $4 million.
Like there must be a reason why. Like I don't get that. That's like more than double what it should be. So that seems odd.
I think that is a case of the auction doing its thing. Yeah. Like you got the right impressive people there. Yeah. Bidding on it, but that is quite a lot of cashish.
Well, that's just massively over the odds. I mean, there's a white 918 down the road. I'm sure you could buy it for like $1 million.
Yeah. What about? And then last time we spoke, I think it was last time we spoke. I feel like GT3s had been out for not that long, and they were going for like 992s, like 250, yeah. 260. How's that all panned out now?
I think it's gone the way we probably thought it would. And yeah, that was always going to be a bit of a hype train when they first came out. And like slowly they've come back down. It's not been a drastic, you know, 250 to 180 is what they are now really for a decent one. But that's happened over the course of probably 2 years. They've slowly came down. You can probably now pick one up for pretty close to list price. And you're seeing it now with the GT3 RSs, which when they first came out, we had one of the first ones, and they were, you know, almost £500,000,
which is insane,
which is double what they cost new. And quite quickly, within the space of 2-3 months, they've gone from 500 to about 400, 375. So they've dropped $100,000 literally within 3 months, which is why, you know, it's all about hype when a car first comes out and you just want it and you'll pay whatever it is to get it. You end up paying over the odds, and then people see the reality as more and more come on the market and they're like, oh God.
And it is, it must be tricky. If you've got an allocation for that car and it comes in and you go, there's one up for nearly 500. I should probably just put mine up for sale.
It's pretty tempting, isn't it?
If someone buys it for plus over 400, like, that's a difficult one there.
And the funny thing is people, I know a guy just recently who, on the GT3s, which I'm sure will happen on the RS as well, where they take the money by flipping it. And then when the car comes back for sale a year later and it's now back at sort of list price, they'll buy it back. So they've got all the benefit of cashing in, and they've actually got their car that they spec'd back.
I like that. I would, if I could get an allocation for certain cars, I could see that. I wonder how much GT3, like GT3 RS, how much people are, I'd be very interested to know from owners, whether it's secondhand or new, what they are using them for and are they enjoying them? Because they seem quite unusable as far as 911s go. Like, yes, you can use it, but it's got no frunk.
Yeah, I do have one customer who's quite well known, to be fair, on social media, who got a very early car, and he literally uses his everywhere. He takes it to the gym, he takes it to the shops, and he's a big advocate for it. But yeah, I would say the majority are probably sitting in people's garages, waiting for car events and waiting for track days and things like that.
The only person I know who's got one that uses it all the time, it's probably the same person.
it's probably a
white car, of which they're all. In fact, he's called Bav. I don't know. Yeah, same person. It's interesting to see. What about 991 versus 992? How is that? This, because manual touring 991s, a lot of hype around them because they're cool.
A lot rarer, 991s. So they're, I think the 991s 50? Are probably, I think there's, 48, I think there was. And the 991s are now more expensive than the 992s. With the Tourings, at least. Obviously, with the winged cars, there was a lot more 991s. But the gap is not that big. Considering the 992s were 250, the 991s only ever got to about 160, 170 maybe. And now for a good 991, you're paying 140-ish. We've got one actually at the moment. And a 992 is now 175, 180. So the gap is pretty small. But some people still prefer the 991.
Yeah. And I think that... Do you have a preference? Have you driven much 992s versus 991s?
There's something a bit cleaner looking-wise about the 991s. I do actually think they look a bit purer. I'm not a mad fan of the nostrils on the front of the 992, but it's probably more track focused. It's not as comfortable. I mean, I know it's a GT3, you don't necessarily expect it to be, but there is.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Something that's a little bit more compliant about the 991s and a bit more hardcore about the 992s. So yeah, I'd personally probably want a 991 also because I think they're just steadier on money.
Yeah, they've done the thing and reached their point. It does. I look at them. I for sort of day to day type situation, I like having a 992 for like the comfort type stuff. It's better, but there's not that much difference in them, like, really. But they do feel, when I look at a 992, they do feel like they've been bloated by like 5-10%. It's in like they've taken like the clean 991, which is a really nice looking shape, and then just kind of gone like
Exactly, yeah. I think the thing that they've got over and above the 901 is that the interiors are a lot nicer. The tech's more clean, it's more intuitive.
Apart from the cup holders.
I don't mind the cup holder. Well, the one in the 901, they're in the glove box, basically, aren't they?
They fold out.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know. It's always a stretch.
I think it's probably all right if you've got a PDK. Yeah. I've got a manual, and if you put anything in the middle...
It gets in the way.
I was actually going to look if someone would make like a custom, or they might have already done it, cup holder that you can attach to the passenger seat, you know, like to the bolts or something.
Yeah, that's
and then just
like
pop
idea.
It down there. But yeah, no, it's interesting seeing what's what. How are things like how over the last couple of years, like Enzos? I feel like Enzos have they gone up much?
They've gone up a lot, yeah. They probably don't get quite the sort of airtime that the F50s and the F40s get because it's not a manual, and the F50s have gone just absolutely through the roof. Obviously, F40s are just so loved. Everyone loves talking about them. The Enzo's gone a little bit under the radar, but they have gone up a lot. You know, they were probably, what were they, two and a half million 2 or 3 years ago. They're now at least 3.5, I'd say. The delivery mileage one we've actually got at the moment is in the fours, but it's, you know, it's a bit of a one-off. It's got a Koyo interior and it's on 136 miles, so literally never been driven.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're still, and you know, named after the man himself, movies just come out, which hopefully is going to help. But yeah, they're still hugely collectible, and I think.
And F50s are in the fours?
Yeah, F50s are in the fours now. So, you know, it's.
Which is the most expensive of the 288 up to now?
I think the most expensive, I think, is the LaFerrari Aperta. Obviously, that's the newest and being the Aperta, but I think the F50 is pretty close. And I think the F50, because of the numbers, is only 349 compared to, you know, everything. Well, the 288 GTO is the rarest, but they're just almost a bit too old, I think. Obviously, they're still huge money and hugely collectible, but I think the F50s are worth more.
Yeah, yeah, it's that particular part of the market has just gone like, and presumably can F50s, they're not quite old enough to go to America yet, are they?
Yeah, they are. It's 25 years, so the Enzo is almost old enough. We've actually had a few inquiries from the US on our Enzo, and it's in 2 years' time that car can go to the US. But F50s are going to the US quite regularly.
Okay.
Because they're 96, 97. So yeah, they're over 25 years.
And if you notice when cars hit that sort of magic 25 years, definitely America, I think, is becoming a bigger and bigger market for these cars.
Yeah. America is the biggest market now. But we don't really sell many cars of that age. So we don't really see it. Obviously, most of the stuff we've got is under 3 years old. So, you know, 90% of the cars we sell, probably 95% are in the UK.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you think historically there's been a sort of right-hand drive premium in the UK, funny enough? Does that exist in that?
It's changing. It definitely was.
Type of car.
It used to be quite a big difference. I'm thinking 599 GTO is a good one, which make right-hand drive, left-hand drive. And the gap is now much smaller, and in a lot of cars it's now reversed, so left-hand drives are actually worth more. But 599 GTOs are still, for some reason, the right-hand drives are worth a bit more, but F12 TDFs, obviously the successor to it, is now the other way around. So right-hand drives are now worth less than left-hand drives. And if you look in the States, pretty much all F12 TDFs are over £1 million.
Wow.
Over here, they're sort of 800,000 pounds.
That's kind of crazy.
It's mad how it's literally flipped.
When I was selling my car, I was like, they're 40, I was looking at like other stuff, and I really enjoyed having, I would rather have had a right-hand drive car to use, but for selling, I think it's really difficult if you're spending that sort of money on anything like new or to not go, yeah, but if I get a left-hand drive, I can sell it to anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. And as much as there's some good countries you can sell right-hand drive to, the market's just much bigger for left-hand drive, especially obviously Europe. You know, Germany is a massive place for big car collectors. And yeah, and now the difficult thing is now with Brexit, the rules have all changed. So it's much harder to sell cars in the EU now without extra VAT and taxes. So really looking outside the EU, Dubai, you know, Middle East, that's your best bet, really.
Yeah. I'm up for this, though. For cars, let's say something like a 997 4.0 or, I don't know, 911R or those sorts of things. I'm very happy, or Speciale or something like that. I would be very happy not owning one of those currently right now, mm-hmm. for them to flip and be mm-hmm. significantly cheaper to be right-hand driving. Like, happy days. Yeah. Cost less.
Yeah. There's certain cars I think just have a big UK fan base. Speciale is one of them. And that's why the Speciale right-hand drives are still a lot more than left-hand drives. But you know, people love those. People, you know, so many of our clients have one or have owned one. So yeah, I don't see them flipping to left-hand drive being more, but they might do.
Do you, and they made a lot of Specialis, like overall. Do you look at any of that sort of type of era car, whether it's like 458 up to now in Ferraris, it's like V8s or sort of the rare Porsches from that period, and go, one of them seems like it, where's the value in that point? Is there a couple of cars in that point that you go like, hang on, you get a lot for what they cost?
Yeah, we're always looking at that. And we're always looking at what is, as much as we're not, you know, we buy cars to sell them more or less straight away. We don't put cars away for a few years or whatever. But we're always got that in mind because, you know, there's certain cars that we think, how have they not taken off? A Bugatti Veyron is quite a good example. You've seen everything in that hypercar bracket go through the roof, and Bugatti Veyrons haven't. Part of that's down to the maintenance costs and things like that. But that car now, and especially 6 to 9 months ago, looked unbelievably good value, Bugatti Veyron. And you're already now seeing that catch up. And now Bugatti Veyrons are selling again. And people are seeing, oh God, they are undervalued. And the other ones, the SLR, McLaren.
What is an SLR now? They're always in the twos.
Yeah, they're still, I think, for a coupe, they're still probably late twos now, early threes. A 722 edition, which is the rarer, more powerful one, is, I think, about 400 to 500. But, you know, that, if you remember the era that they were in, Porsche Carrera GTs, over £1 million, Enzos, yeah, £3-4 million. So the SLRs just look crazy cheap.
Yeah.
So a lot of people think that's the next one, possibly. But again, maintenance costs, they're a problem. They're a problem.
And people have said that about SLRs for a long time.
Mm. But it gets to a point where you're like, okay, well, the potential in value, the 20 grand for a service is insignificant compared to if it goes for 200 grand, you know, increase in value, it's worth paying, obviously.
And if you turn up somewhere in an SLR, people go, that's a serious
Yeah, because they weren't the prettiest things in the world when they came out. But I think they've now crossed over into that sort of old school cool thing, and they sound amazing, and they're pretty cool cars.
They're pretty cool. It's a big like style statement. They have a real like look that doesn't, you know, it's quite different to a AMG GTR or something. Like, how are those done? I know that's a car you particularly like.
Yeah, I had one. I think I had one last time we spoke. I still love them. I don't have one anymore. But you know, for bang for buck, when you want a modern supercar kind of thing, you know, you look at 100 grand and you think, what can I buy? An AMG GTR just stands out for me. I mean, I do like the R8s, which is sort of similar price bracket, or you go Porsche. But I think the people that buy into R8s, AMG GTRs, it's all about the noise, the fact they're German, everything works well. And they're a different kettle of fish to, you know, what Porsches can you buy for 100 grand, maybe a GT4. you know, maybe a 991.1 GT3. For me, a GTR, AMG, or an R8 is just a bit more exciting.
Yeah, and what year is the GTR? Is there like first lot, are they 17, 18?
Yeah, 17 they came out first, I think, or 18, around then, yeah. So, and they haven't replaced it yet.
And what are they now, 100?
100, they're about 100, 110.
They've been like 100 for like 4 years.
They went up as everything went up, and they've come back down as everything's come back down, but only by sort of smaller fractions. But, you know, they're fairly seasonal, I think. You know, they're real drive. They're fairly bumpy, right? I used mine every day, drove it to work and back every day, and I loved it. I got used to the ride not being silky smooth. I don't expect it to be, but for me, yeah, there's not another car at 100 grand that I think gets as much value.
And they are, I've always liked them. I've always looked at them and gone, they're quite cool. And in like a non, for me, I couldn't do any of the like Larry Green or whatever, just like a sort of nice, the blue or whatever. You go, it's actually quite a special car. And you don't see them.
You don't see them. That's the thing.
People, and they're really practical. Yeah,
a lot of people are like, whoa, what is that? When I had mine, people didn't, you know, non-car people, they were just like, oh my God, it looks like it should be 250 grand and it's not. And you can, you know, I left mine on my drive, leave it on the street in London, never have to worry about it.
Yeah. And then it went GTR, GTR Pro, which I feel like that's really nerdy in terms of like an average person going, what's that? You go like, I can't really explain that. It's somewhere, it's a bit more, it's like a plus version of the GTR. And then we now have Black Series. How have Black Series done?
Black Series, so literally got one in my view right now. It's, so they were about 330, I think, list price. They went up to probably 100 grand over, 45. They've now come back down a little bit to sort of 380, 375. So yeah, stopped making them. It's a Black Series, so it's always going to hold something, you know, in people's eyes. The Black Series is the ultimate Mercedes. So, you know, the biggest complaint about them is that the GTR and the GTR Pro sound better because they changed the
strengths.
But looks wise, I mean, you know, it's the ultimate Batmobile. So, you know, nothing can really compete.
When it came out, I was like, nah.
Bit over the top.
What's with the engine? It looks over the top. But now when I see one, I'm like, oh no, that's it's pretty cool. Like, it's pretty serious bit of kit, and I hear they're quite good to drive. On the sort of everyday family type car and stuff like that. Where are we covered? Range Rovers are now, you can get one.
Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of them, but they're still probably one of our best selling cars. Saying that, you know,
is that the most popular sort of second car / family car type that you come across?
Yeah, and as far as, you know, SUVs go, which most people seem to have an SUV in there, you know, especially if they've got kids, Range Rover's probably number one for our client base. I mean, a lot of people love the Urus, a lot of people love the G-Wagons. They're still really hot.
Is a 63 still over list?
A 63?
G-Wagon.
Oh, G63, yeah. No, they're not over list anymore. No. That's actually what I probably want next. I've got a Defender 90 V8, but I've had another kid, so I probably need a slightly bigger car. And the G-Wagon seems like the natural choice up, although I like the fact the Defender 90 is small and kind of nippy and get around.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah.
And then have you driven one of the new Cayennes?
I haven't driven the new one, no. But obviously driven plenty of Cayennes. I like them. I like the GTS. But the new one, I can't imagine it's going to be massively different. And I know that you can...
It's got some trick suspension or something. I was looking at hybrids of all sorts, going like, our family car may next be a hybrid. But so many of the hybrids, you chop so much boot space.
Yeah.
Like you lose so much.
And add a lot of
they are heavy.
Yeah.
But I know the new Cayenne's got a whopping boot. So I'm like, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
And the beauty, I guess, of the hybrids, and especially with electric, is the tax benefits and, you know, if you can run it as a company car, it is massively beneficial. So that kind of, you know, counteracts the weight and the sort of inconvenience of having to charge them up and things.
Yeah. Do you run? Do you don't run an electric or anything like that?
No, I haven't. I probably should for company car tax purposes. But
if you had to buy an electric car for as a company car, because that would get most of the all the tax benefits, what would you get?
Good question. I mean, my wife drives a Range Rover Sport, so probably I'd just use her. She should probably drive a hybrid, and I'll just put that as my company car.
Yeah,
and then I can drive what I want. But yeah, electric stuff. I mean, do you know what the car I keep hearing good things about is the Lotus? Is it Electra?
Electra.
Yeah. I've had quite a few, two or three of my clients that have got them recently, and they are raving about them.
Really interesting.
Yeah. Which is interesting. Yeah.
A friend of mine has got one. I've not spoken to him much since he's got it, but it's like the thing he keeps mentioning is it's like 2.1 meters wide or really? Two. It's one of the widest cars you can buy by like a reasonable margin.
Yeah. And that's enough to put me off.
You hit like a width restriction or something. And he's like, it's just game over. Like, you just can't get through things.
Right. And London is just, you know, Southwest London, there are so many, I've done so many wheel curbs going through Fulham and places like that. It's just painful.
Yeah, that's why something like a Defender on Steelies or something, you know, with like tons of sidewall and then also the rim you're not that bothered about would make for a bit more of a luxurious experience because you're not bricking it the whole time. What else? I think we covered most of the things we're seeing. What are you thinking about in the car space at the moment? Any topics?
I mean, I guess you know, for us, we're just planning ahead for next year. Do we think the depreciation on cars is going to continue? I don't think it will. You know, people are sort of, as I said, getting back into thinking finance is more normal. I mean, you know, we always think what cars are coming out next year, what's going to be the next big thing.
What is coming out next year? I'm not really sure.
I mean, what springs to mind? I guess there's the new Range Rover Sport SVR or SV is called, I think now, SV Edition 1. That's probably going to be quite a good seller for us.
Yeah.
There's the Puro Sangue.
Yes.
That's a big one for us.
Have you had any in yet?
Haven't had anyone
there
any
aren't
in
many
yet.
UK
no,
cars,
I think there's a handful being delivered and have been offered one, but the premiums on those are scary, or at least the people that have got them will only sell them if they get silly money.
Because what's that list? 400?
They're about 400. And then people want 100 grand plus. Yeah. So that's the most common call I'm getting at the moment is people, I can get a slot for a Puro Sangue, but it doesn't come till next year, this time next year. And what shall I do? Shall I take it? And I'm like, that's a long time away.
That is a long time away.
That a lot can change in a year, and we've seen it this year. So I'm saying, look, if it was me, I wouldn't.
Because if you're financing that to some regard, you're basically at 10% now. So you're spending, at that point, you're possibly spending 40 grand a year
just
on interest.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the people that can afford a 400, 500 grand car can afford to pay the interest. You'd like to think, but
they might not want to.
No, you don't want to, but you know, I guess if they've got, you know, the funny shift that we've seen, which is not great for us in terms of finance, but the collectors and the investors, they used to buy, even if they got 100 million in the bank, they would buy a LaFerrari or Bugatti for 2-3 million pounds, say, but they would always fund it because to them, the interest rate was so low. And they were like, well, I can earn way more than 3% by my investment. So I'll borrow the money, I'll finance the LaFerrari, and
I'm making 2% a year anyway. Yeah,
exactly. So, and that's obviously now shifted. So very few of those people would ever finance a car like that. But, you know, it's hopefully it will change back. There's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, hopefully. hopefully. But it does mean that there are going to be, at some point in time in the next year, 2 years, whatever, some unbelievable bargains.
Yeah, and there already is. I mean, we're, you know, some people take it to extremes because they know the market is not where it was, and you're just getting people making silly offers, which I get if the car's overpriced, make an offer. But, you know, there's just some people just, you know, nothing's ever cheap enough.
Yeah,
you can have the best priced car in the whole market, but they'll only buy it if they get 10 grand off, 50, yeah. 15 grand off. And you're just like,
well, here's a real deal right now. That red 812, I said I wouldn't get another Ferrari again, but if you'll sell that for 100 grand, I will take it.
As would I and the rest of the lot. But yeah.
There is actually a really nicely spec'd 812 with like 2,000 miles on it for sale.
Rosso Fuoco.
Fuoco. It's like the best red.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing, that car. And I'm amazed it hasn't sold yet, but it will go.
It's what it is. That's what it is. These things are changing. So I normally wrap this up with five questions. You've been on this a bazillion times already, so I won't hit you with the five. What do you think is the most undervalued? What should be worth? What's a good buy right now?
I think the one that springs to mind is one we spoke about earlier, is the SLR. I think that's undervalued by 100 grand possibly. And, you know, being the only car that's got that combination of being a McLaren and a Mercedes, that's a historical car. So I think fast forward 10 years, that will prove to be a very good buy.
Nice. And five car garage, unlimited value. What are you going to have?
Five car garage. If I'm thinking sort of sensibly in terms of, I can't just have five hypercars. I would have my hypercar, which would for me has always been the Pagani Zonda. That's
which one?
The one. Probably I'd go a Zonda F coupe. That was, I think I've said it before, where that was the car, the day I started working here, we had one in the showroom, and I just literally remembered just being so mesmerized. And I've never got that out of my head. Second car I would have, do I have to have a classic? I probably should have an older classic, shouldn't I? What would I have? I do like old school Lambos, I have to say, as much as I know they could be a horror. But I'd maybe pick that Countach from Wolf of Wall Street, not the crashed one. but I think they're very cool. And then I'd probably have a C63 Black Series. Massive soft spot for me again, and just think they're super cool. And I could use it, but I guess for a real daily today with modern tech and good sound system and everything that I'd want on a daily basis, I would probably go, I want to say a G-Wagon because I just keep thinking about G-Wagons, but I also love the Targas, Porsche Targas, and 992 Targa 4 GTS. But let me go G-Wagon. I'll go G63 because I just think that kind of allows me to take the kids and go places. Do I have any left? I've got I think I've got one left.
Let's say you got one left.
I've got one left, and I'll probably go, I've got to have a Ferrari. What Ferrari? I'd probably go 458 Speciale.
Ooh.
Something about them. Something
there about is something them. About them.
So yeah, that would be sort of my like modern classic that I'd take out on a weekend.
Nice. What's a Speciale nowadays?
Probably at least 350 for a good one. For a sort of delivery mileage, you're probably paying 400. Again, left-hand drives are like 300, if that. So if you're not fussed about left-hand drive, that's the cheapest way in. But yeah, for a good one, you're paying, I'd say, 350, and 360.
With those cars, I was always amazed at how low the mileages always seem to be for something that we know is quite drivable and usable. Mm-hmm. And everyone talks about how great they are and how much they drive them. You never see any with like 30,000 miles on.
No, they tend to attract. I mean, most, like a lot of our clients, the big collectors have all had one or have all got one. And, you know, those kind of people have 20 cars. Yeah. So they just park them up. So there's quite a lot of cars that are, yeah, just ultra low miles. But yeah, they are very usable. So maybe all the people that use them have just got them and are keeping them.
Yeah. I a yellow Speciale is a car I would love to own at some point. And I don't know, it would go from whatever value I bought it at to quite a lot less, because I would drive it like 5,000 miles in a year. But anyway, right. Well, thanks very much for coming on the podcast.
Pleasure.
Show me around.
Thanks for coming back.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.